Welcome back, folks. Well, as I've been saying for several days, I'm looking forward to today because I've got with me today my good friend and our chief strategist, Harry S. Dent. Harry is, as I said earlier, I think the foremost demographic economist in the world and a person that I truly, truly respect. And I don't think we could have picked a better day to have him on because I know he's got an opinion or two about Greece. Good morning, Harry.
Well, hi, Mike.
How are you?
So, good.
What do you think's going on now? What do you think of the Greek election? Let's just move around the world there a little bit. How about Greece?
Well, you know, it went as good as it could have with the more moderate party getting the slight majority, but they don't have a clear majority in the overall, and so they've got to get that first this week, and they probably will, and then they've got to go back head-to-head with Europe and renegotiate, even though, of course, this is going to be a lot better than negotiating with the party that says, hey, we don't want any austerity, we don't want any responsibility for our past debts and stuff. So I don't think this is over yet, and I think that what you're going to see in late, you know, as Greece starts to run out of money, late June, early July, you're going to kind of see, at least somewhat of a showdown, and it may look tricky for a while. Then they'll probably come to some tentative solution. But I tell you right now that Greece would have done the world a favor if they'd have just voted to exit the euro and just ended this thing. I know, Mike, you can add this up, but people should just don't be the frog in the water where it just gets warmer and warmer and warmer and you never step out and boil. You know, look at the temperature gauge out there. Greece was the first country to get in serious trouble and bankruptcy, basically, in Europe. So everybody bailed them out, two bailouts, a lot of stuff under the table we'll talk about in a few minutes. And here we are years later. Is Greece better? No, their economy's worse. They've been extended more debt at every level. So a country that was already bankrupt has been extended a massive amount of extra debt. So, of course, their economy's in more trouble. There is no way out of this, especially with their demographics. All of Southern Europe have slowing demographics for decades, like Japan started to a couple decades ago. So it's not an accident that these countries are getting in trouble first. Their demographics are much worse than Northern Europe and the United States. And like Japan, they've got long-term nowhere to go. So there's no bailing these countries out. And again, we've already proven this. You bail them out. A year later, they're worse off. More debt, worse economy. And then they have austerity around that debt. And, of course, they start complaining because the austerity hurts. And, of course, it does. But, hey, you know, they're the ones that got themselves in a mess. And as we know, Mike, it's like everything else in this bubble. You know, we keep talking about a bubble economy. We've had a bubble economy now for decades where low interest rates and high speculation and real estate speculation and liberal bank lending and government wants everybody to have a home. That's one big thing that happened here and around the world. But the euro itself was basically a debt machine, a bubble machine, because the euro allowed the stronger countries to not have such high-valued currencies, so they get to export more. The weaker countries say, oh my gosh, we can get all these exports, and how do we get them? Well, we borrow money from the stronger countries, just like we've been borrowing money from China to buy their exports so we could run trade deficits. So these countries basically, exports increase for the strong countries, debt increases, people living off debt in the weaker countries, and now this is all coming to a head. And basically what everybody's doing in the U.S. is just as bad. Anybody thinks the U.S. is fine right now and we've gotten over this is just as insane as people in Greece and just as much in denial. Around the world, everybody's keeping this bubble going. The you know, central bank, basically the ECB, LTRO, lends money at almost no rates to the banks in the weak countries in Europe. These banks turn around and buy their own central bank's bonds to keep their interest rates low so they can keep stimulating. And this is just a giant bubble machine. So, So at some point, you can only blow up the balloon so far. And we keep stretching it. We think we're getting close to what's called the bang moment, where something goes wrong and bam, you get a worldwide crisis like we saw in 2008. It's just this time it's going to start in Europe. So this is not over. And Greece is never going to pay back its loans. And if they start bailing out Spain, then they're just total idiots.
And that's true. Hey, listen, Harry, we've got a caller. I'm going to bring him on, let him ask his question, then we'll probably have to go to a break to answer it. Bob, welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning, I mean.
Good morning,
gentlemen. Listen, I got a question for Harry. I believe that there's a win-win solution to the Eurozone, and the win-win solution is very simple, how I see it. Germany either has to get kicked out or they have to leave, and when they leave, that will permit the status quo governments to be able to print their own money. The remaining southern countries would be able to print their own money and stay in power for a little longer to keep the Ponzi scheme going. But to me, that's the only win-win solution. When it happens, I don't know. What's Harry's thoughts on that?
You know, I'll just
okay.
You can stop me anytime. I think that is the most elegant solution. Instead of four or five countries leaving, let Germany pull out, and like you say, let the rest of the country stimulate, you know, get off of austerity, grow, devalue. But it's still going to cause a lot of pain. It just, you won't have bank runs. That's what I like about that solution. I think it won't happen. I think it's unrealistic, but I do think it would be the simplest, most elegant solution here.
Okay. Hang on, folks. We're going to be back with Harry Denton in just a few moments. Stay with us. You're listening to Mike Robertson, Straight Talk Money, Business 1110 KTK. Back to you in just a moment. Welcome back, folks. We've got with us today Harry Denton, my friend, and who I feel is the top demographic economist in the world. And by the way, Harry's got a new book out. Well, it's not so new. It's been out a couple of months, but it's called The Great Crash Ahead, Strategies for a World Turned Upside Down. And you've got to go get a copy of this book. I was just reading on the back cover from John Malden. I know a lot of you out there know who John Malden is. This is a great quote. Dent brings more convincing analysis on the unbearable debt that is weighing down the United States and the world economy. But more importantly, brings the unique lens of demographics to show how the Fed's stimulus plan is doomed to fail with the rising rising savings and slowing spending of the massive baby boom generation. A must-read book for prospering in the inevitable debt crisis ahead. You need to get a copy of this book, folks. If you don't know how, just give Piggy a call, 713-624-4004. We'll set it up for you. Harry, let's get back to let's quickly go to Spain, and then I do want to come back across the pond and talk about us. But what do you think is going to happen with Spain?
Well, you know, they're starting to bail out Spain. And then what we said, you know, back in May is that, look, Spain is not – you can't bail out Spain. All the southern European countries and other ones are in deep trouble, demographics, debt and stuff. But Spain has an added dimension. They had the biggest real estate bubble in Europe. Germans invested in Spain, Irish, UK banks, everybody funded a big bubble where they were building vacation houses for northern Europeans, and everybody there was speculating. Their bubble went 3 years longer than the U.S. real estate bubble, went 30% higher relatively. This bubble is bursting. It's only begun to burst. Home prices are down about 22% there. They've got to fall 55, 60, 70%, even more than the U.S. before it's over. So their banking system is in trouble. We know how hard it is to bail yourself out of a real estate bubble and banking crisis around that. Here we are, 5 years later, the unprecedented stimulus program. We can't get housing to come back because there's no demand. Well, here's the thing. We've got an echo boom generation that'll eventually buy houses again. Spain, Southern Europe doesn't have that. The 30-year-olds that buy houses from 30 to 39, the prime buying house thing, we show in Spain and Southern Europe and even in Germany, Switzerland, Austria, drops about 40% for the next two decades. So they massively overbuilt real estate at all levels, residential, commercial. Now, and they got a depression over that, 25% unemployment now, and most of that's coming from the construction industries. And there's nobody to buy housing for 20 years ahead. So if you try to bail out Spain, you think Greece is an endless bailout. Spain is much bigger, and they're harder to bail out. Greece doesn't have a lot of private debt and extreme real estate bubble. Even Italy doesn't. Spain is the country that's going to break the back of Europe. Bailing out Spain is totally misguided. They should have not bailed out anybody, and they should have folded their hands, these northern countries. Their perception is wrong. They think, oh, if we bail out these countries and get over this hiccup, then we don't lose our exports and we don't get defaulted on all the debt they owe us. Well, you're going to put more and more bailout in there, and you're going to get defaulted on far more debt and still lose the exports. This is a huge miscalculation. So There's no way out of this European thing, and at some point in the next year, and maybe in the next few months, people are going to realize this, and people are going to lose faith in this recovery in Europe. There is no way Europe's coming back with their demographics and debt.
Okay, so we need to we pass on Europe. Let's move over to the United States. What's going to happen over here? When you look forward, what do you see? What do you see for the markets? What do you see for interest rates?
Well, you know, we've seen interest rates come down, 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 a lot of it because government's pushing it down on purpose, and a lot of it because there's just a flight to quality. People are running out of the worst bonds in Europe and other countries, and they're moving into German bonds and UK bonds and U.S. bonds. This is a huge miscalculation. All of these countries are going to be holding the tab for all the other failing countries, so these bonds are not risk-free. People just don't know where anywhere else to go. These yields are going to go up at some point. I think bond yields in the U.S., probably get down to as low as 1.3% in the next few months with all this slowing and problems in Europe. And then at some point realize people, bondholders realize Germany's not risk-free, U.S. is not risk-free, and these yields start going up, worrying about, debt problems here. Stocks, I think, are in a slight rallying mode here. Why? They're hoping for Fed stimulus. This is, we call it, Mike, the market on crack. The first thing anybody on crack wants is more crack. They worry about fundamentals and how they're going to live later. They just want more crack to get through the next day. The markets are hoping the Fed's going to make some type of move on Wednesday, and I think they're likely to make some gesture. We're telling investors if the markets rally this week, especially we got a short-term projection up as high as 1406 on the S&P 500, about 4% or so higher than there. We're telling people, you want to get out of stocks and you haven't gotten out of stocks yet, this is the ideal time, because I think you're going to see another crisis in Europe this summer before the next stimulus and solution comes out. And then, you're probably going to get a rally into the election, and then you're going to see a bigger crisis next year. So we say if you're looking to lighten up on stocks, get out on a rally this week. I think there is going to be a showdown in the next week or two as Greece starts to run out of money. Because, again, even if this party says, okay, we're willing to be good boys and girls and not, say screw you, we're willing to take on some austerity, but they're going to bargain over it. They're going to want as little austerity as possible. So this isn't over, and the markets go down over that. They bounce a little bit, but I think by July or August, we have some type of crisis in Europe. I think one of the things, Mike, we tell people don't understand all the underground debt. Germany alone, central bank has extended $800 billion to $900 billion in short-term credit to the central banks of these weaker countries. Nobody sees that. People don't understand there's an emergency loan agreement in the ECB that's extended $270 billion. They just call other debt. Nobody knows about this. These northern countries are getting more and more debt to these southern countries, and you just can't keep doing this. They're just going to owe you more and more and more, and at some point you have to fold your hand. Like I said, they should have folded a long time ago. So I still think you're going to see some sort of crisis between late June in August, and that takes stocks down. So if you're going to get out of stock, I'd get ahead of that crisis, because I think our target is about 1140 on the S&P 500 if we see another crack down. I don't think most investors want to sit through that.
Now, are you also looking for a larger sell-off in 2013?
Yes.
Maybe a rally into the in the presidential elections, as you said, and then something more significant in 2013?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's possible we could really get some strange events and we could have a bigger crisis this year. But what we're seeing is there's still a lot of stimulus, from Europe in the past, and still more coming, still more stimulus. With this much stimulus, it's still kind of hard to have a total breakdown. So, yeah, we think more likely and more likely around Spain. When Spain becomes the country that's going to exit or not, now you got a real crisis, much more than Greece. I think that's likely to happen by early to mid next year. So, yeah, let's say a 20% correction before it's done this year, rally into the elections or so, and then a much bigger, more like a 2008 size crash or more in 2013. And frankly, it's likely to last into 2014. Crashes like this usually take at least 2 years, sometimes 3 years, to work out when the banking system finally melts down. And that's what we're saying. I mean, it may sound funny, but the obvious thing here is just to realize we had the biggest debt bubble in history, realize that real estate has to come down, realize that a lot of debt has to default and be restructured, and be over it. Iceland's done this, and Iceland's in a much better position than the rest of Europe because they didn't have the option of blowing their way out of this and all this crazy stimulus and stuff. They weren't in the euro. They just devalued their currency, defaulted on a lot of foreign debt, and now they're healthy, relatively healthy again. The obvious thing, admit you overborrowed, and don't use debt, don't add more debt to a debt bubble. I mean, this is going to be the most obvious thing in history in retrospect. Like, what, were these people crazy? What were they smoking when they just kept adding debt? I mean, all they do is keep adding debt in different ways to Greece, Spain, and all these countries every day and expect they're going to turn around and pay it back at some point. There is not a chance. I will say this with no resolve. I mean, there is not a chance these countries are going to be able to pay back these debt and be able to turn around, especially with an increasing debt burden and weakening demographics. It's the craziest thing in history.
Now, so if they're not going to be able to pay it back, how does this all end?
There's a number of ways. Bob said earlier, nobody's thought of this. It's a brilliant suggestion. Basically, Germany's over here saying, austerity, 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 we're holding the bag, we're fiscally responsible, we can't bail out you guys forever, and everybody else is saying, we want more crack, we want more crack, we want to get to another day. We don't want the austerity. Let the euro stay that way, since most countries want that. Let Germany and maybe the Netherlands, a few of the stronger countries, pull out. The euro can devalue. Their currencies go up. I mean, Germany still loses exports and stuff, but they get to preserve their currency and their fiscal situation. And that way you don't have a run in the banks. The problem with these weaker countries leaving, if Greece leaves the euro at some point, then there's speculation that Spain, and then people start pulling their bank deposits out of Spain, and then the ECB has to make under-the-table loans to Spain like they're doing to Greece now, hundreds of billions of dollars. And, you know, you get bank run after bank run. If Germany leaves and everybody else stays in the euro, there's no reason to pull your money out of the euro. The euro stays intact. So it's actually a more elegant solution, I think, in the long term. The best solution is you basically do that. The weaker countries band together in one eurozone, a weaker one. They get to devalue. They get to stimulate or whatever they want to do and go to hell in a handbasket, which they will do kind of, but they do it together, stronger than apart, and you let the stronger country stay in a second euro that is stronger. So you have a euro one and a euro two, or somebody call it the egg and the egg white and the egg yolk or something like that. And they've got to deal with this debt. There's got to be a default at some point. These countries have to default, and they have to devalue so that their exports and tourism is more competitive again. But it means there's going to be pressure on wages in their countries and inflation from having to pay more for imports. But these countries have to have that reality. But they have to default. They cannot pay all this debt, and they cannot carry it forever. It's absolute insanity. This is, again, classic thing, crack addict wants more crack, get through another day, push the can down the road, as they say. You can't do it at some point. You stretch the balloon, all this debt, all this stimulus, including in the United States, including in China, with all their massive overbuilding, is just stretching this balloon to at some point, some pin's going to hit it, and it's just going to pop. And when it pops, we're going to have a worse crisis than 2008, and this is inevitable. You can't muddle through this. The demographics and the debt trends are too burdensome, and we're just adding more debt every day. The U.S. government's adding debt every day, and Europe's adding even more debt every day in stimulus. You just can't do it.
Well, let's shift to the other part of the world. What about China? Some people say it's slowing down and it's going to have a hard landing. Some people say it's going to just kind of drift down and it's going to be okay. What are your thoughts on China?
Well, same thing. Bubble everywhere around the world. China's been overbuilding to employ all their migrant labor coming in from rural areas. And when somebody moves, we've done studies on this, when you move from a rural area to an urban area, you triple somebody's income on average. It's a wonderful growth machine. China's doing this on steroids. More example of bubbles. They're building massive cities, massive housing developments, malls. They're building roads, bridges to nowhere. Railroads, they're building 30-40% more industrial capacity they need. China's just been overbuilding to keep growing at 8-12% and keep people happy. Well, they've been doing this for a decade. Now they got all these empty cities and stuff, and so people say, well, China's got all these reserves and all, you know, their debt's not as high as Europe, although it's higher than you think because most of it's local, but that they can keep doing this. They already have loans failing. They're already having real estate start to fall. China's got the biggest real estate bubble in the world. China is consuming 40 to 50% of the industrial commodities, copper, everything else, everything but oil, they're consuming, and they're causing, their slowdown's causing commodity prices start to collapse. They've already peaked. We've been warning about this for years. But China can't have a soft landing. They have so overbuilt. If their economy slows down a bit too much, real estate's going to crack. And guess who owns all the real estate in China? The top 10% of consumers that put all their money in real estate because their banks are so terrible and pay no interest because the government forces interest rates down there to help the banks. So these people put all their money in real estate. Real estate is bubbled. Real estate's going to crash. And the only people that are rich in China that are spending 60% of their GDP, of their consumer spending, are going to melt down. And China's going to have a hard landing. China's the last bubble to burst. But you got to understand, everywhere in the world, everything has conspired to create a greater and greater bubble since the 1990s, and especially in the last decade. All types of speculation, low interest rates, overbuilding everything, and now this bubble's coming to a head, and government's only solution around the world is to keep the bubble going. That's not a good strategy. Like we said earlier, you just stretch it till it goes further. So people think China is the backstop. China is going to basically sink the emerging world, because everybody exports commodities to them. China's going to impact Australia and countries like that who have not had a crisis thus far. So we see a worldwide crisis, because this is a worldwide debt bubble, worldwide real estate bubble, worldwide overexpansion in the last decade. So bubbles always end. They always burst, and they never end well. So investors just need to be aware of that. If you get out of the way of this, everything's going to go down in price, and you're going to be wealthy again. But you got to get out of the way of all these bubbly assets, stocks, real estate, commodities, including gold and silver.
All right. Well, we've got about a minute to go. So what would you recommend to the investor out there? What position should they be taking over the next several months?
Well, just like everything else, from conservative, more conservative to more aggressive. If you're a conservative investor, just be out of stocks, be in safe, short-term bonds, high-quality short-term bonds, not long-term anything, not government, not corporate anything. Wait this out, let things fall and reinvest a couple years from now after the bubble crashes. Then you can reinvest in nice, conservative, long-term growth dividend stocks and stuff like that. For more aggressive, be in the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar goes up in crisis. Be short the euro if you want to bet on things going down, and short different stock indices. So you can be partly in cash and safe, partly short, depending on your risk curve. But you got to bet in the next few years that risk assets, commodities and stocks, are going to go down, even bonds at some point. So be safe or be short, depending on your risk profile.
Hey, Harry, thank you so much for being with us today and for sharing your thoughts. It's great to have you on. Thank you for taking
okay.
the time.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Harry. Thank you. Harry Dent. Be back to you in just a few moments, folks.